Welcome back, everyone, to a fabulous and jam-packed new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have a full house today, and I mean a full house, joining us to talk about an amazing festival here in New York. We are, of course, talking about Phrygian New York's presentation of the 2024 Queer Leaf Festival, happening June 13th through July 3rd at Under St. Mark's. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting Phrygian.nyc. We are joined by just a huge gamut of the amazing acts that are at this festival, including the co-artistic director and curator, Jimmy Lovett, the creator and performer of the show A Drag Is Born, Edu Diaz, the writer and performer of the show Pearl Necklace, Jamie Brickhouse, the writer and performer of the show Give Me the MacArthur Genius Grant, Tariq Ziad, the writer and performer of the show Ladies at a Gay Girls Bar, Maggie C, the director Tori Bogacki, and the writer and performer Mackenzie Crestel from The Goblin Woman, the writer and producer Jess Loricello from If I Did, You Deserved It, the writer Leif Larson and director Matthew Pizulich from Shake the Disease, Daniel Levski, the writer, producer, and one of the performers in War and Play, and finally, the collaborator and performer, Evan Michael Smith from Too Much Hair. As I mentioned, it's a full house, but this is an amazing festival, and we can't wait to bring you more of it. So let's jump in and welcome on our full house. Everybody, good morning, good afternoon. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. So happy to have you all here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Glad to be here.
And the choir said amen. Yes. I'm so happy all of you are here. I'm so happy we're talking about the Queer Leaf Festival. I'm all sorts of excited. And what a wonderful lineup is happening this year. So first, I want to jump to our curator and the co-artistic director at Phrygian New York, Jimmy Lovett. So good to see you again.
You too.
A little bit about this year's festival.
Well, this year is Queer Leaf's 10th birthday, which is very exciting. It occurred to me earlier today that I need to come up with a plot to secure us some cake at some point during the fest. Yeah, this year we are only in Under St. Mark's, which is mostly a good thing, I think. I love that venue. It's so intimate. It's so, you know, indie vibes, but it does mean that we are just packed in there with all of the shows and our monthly programming. So it's going to be an amazing sort of a whirlwind this year.
That is fantastic. And speaking of great indie theater, we've got some wonderful shows here that I would love for all of our listeners to get to know. And so with that, I would love for all of our guests to tell us a little bit about their shows. And Edo, I want to come to you first. It's so good to see you. Welcome back. You had an amazing run at the New York City Fringe Festival, taking home several awards. I absolutely loved your show, but can you tell us a little bit, you know, refresh our drink about A Drag Is Born?
Well, A Drag Is Born is a blend of clown and drag and magical realism, I would say, and tells the story of a guy, of a very random guy, which is a version of myself, who suddenly becomes a drag on stage in a very ridiculous way. So that's the story. And I'm so pleased to come back to the Phrygian family with a Queer Leaf Festival.
That's wonderful. Jamie Brickhouse with Pearl Necklace, tell us a little bit about that.
I am happy to. You know, I think of it as the love child of David Sedaris and Dan Savage. It is, you know, when it comes to, it's a true story. It's my story, solo show. And I am on the eve of getting married, which is an institution I've always been ambivalent about. And before I get married, I kind of replay my sex life, which gives new meaning to the terms parks and recreation. And it's a pretty bawdy, funny, and sometimes touching romp through my sex and love life. And I debuted it at Under St. Mark's in November at the Gotham Storytelling Festival that Phrygian hosted. So I am thrilled to be back there. And I also got a great review while I was there from London Theatre Reviews, Lou Reviews, who called it funny, sharp, and camp, hysterical romp, delivered with body panache and a naughty sense of the comic. So I can't wait to perform it again.
I love that. Tariq Ziad, you're the writer and performer of Give Me the MacArthur Genius Grant. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, Give Me the MacArthur Genius Grant is a very stupid show, is what I like to say first off, because if I don't say that, I feel like people are going to be like, oh, you think you deserve the MacArthur Genius Grant? But it's a joke. The Genius Grant, it's an $800,000 award that creatives get randomly that basically says you did amazing, you're iconic. And for someone like me, you know, like a queer, like artist of color who's undeniably broke and attempting to understand what it means to be an artist, to be a success, to have achievements, it sounds really nice. So I basically just use the idea of the award as an entryway into discussions of topics like that. What it is to be a success, what it is to be a failure, who gets to say that you're an artist who's financially viable. And mostly it's a fun, silly comedy, good time. Yeah. I workshopped it last year with the New York Department of Parks and Recs, actually, in Bed-Stuy as like a community event, and it was really fun. So excited to bring it back to New York.
That is amazing. Maggie C., tell us about your show, Ladies at a Gay Girls Bar.
Hi. First, I want to say I think we all deserve the MacArthur Genius Grant. Just going to put that into the universe. Ladies at a Gay Girls Bar is an hour-long solo dance theater performance, and it follows a character based on me as when I was a teenage gay rights activist in the late 90s, learning a little bit about queer history and also trying to figure out my gender and my place in the community through studying history.
That is fantastic. Oh, I love it. Let's go ahead and jump to Mackenzie Crestful, the writer and one of the performers in The Goblin Woman. Can you tell us a bit about your show?
So The Goblin Woman, I call a very distant echo of the poem The Goblin Market by Christina Rossetti. So it's not an adaptation. It just takes some very loose inspiration from the imagery of the poem. But The Goblin Woman is an experimental movement play driven by poetry. It's a collection of movements, scenography, vignettes, and poems that tell the story of Lizzie and Laura, who are two sisters, but are more reflective of two halves of the same whole. And also Jeannie, who's a long lost, almost lover of Lizzie's. And it's really a battle of dichotomies through the show, the warring of identities, the conflicts between repression and freedom, the true self that we all kind of hide internally, and the self that we present, the should be that's sort of forced on us by society. And so It's very peculiar. It's strange, experimental. Much of it is devised. We've been working on devising particularly the movement as a collective, as a cast of eight. And ultimately, we are seeking catharsis. And we're hoping that everybody who comes in contact with the show, both those of us who are working on it and those who will see it, will be able to walk away emboldened to embrace the self that we hide away out of fear.
That is amazing. I love that. Jess Lorisello, tell us about your piece, If I Did, You Deserved It.
Yeah, so If I Did, You Deserved It is a kind of ensemble comedy play about a bunch of rich gay people who find themselves in hell for being rich, not for being gay. And they each have to take turns pleading their case to the devil, trying to convince him that they don't belong in hell, even though they aren't entirely convinced of it themselves.
Ooh, I like that idea as well. Continuing on to Shake the Disease, Leif Larson, how about you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, let's see. Well, Shake the Disease is about a few things, but I would say at its heart, it's a ghost story. It's about the ghosts that live in the vacuum that AIDS kind of left behind with so many of us dying. So it takes place during the summer of 1989 at a gay resort in the Redwoods north of San Francisco. It takes place 10 years after the White Night riots, and queer people are still really mad about Harvey Milk, about Dan White. They're still acting up, but they're also sick and they're dying. And at this resort, we meet the characters of the play who kind of orbit around this vortex of death and grief and get sucked up into it in this kind of supernatural way. which introduces some of the horror elements of the play. Kind of an urban myth, without giving away too much. There's violence, there's murder, people do die in this play, but it's not all gloom and doom. There's people who kiss and flirt and fall in love also. It's a story of loss and regret, but also queer joy and resilience.
Fabulous. Danielle Levski, tell us about War and Play.
Yeah, sure thing. Funny enough, queer joy and resilience plays a really big part in War and Play too, Leaf. So that's, love the, what are we going to call that? The relation there. So War and Play is an interactive, nonverbal clown show that specifically explores human resilience and queer joy during Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022. Our story follows the journey of this queer clown couple, Vera and Nadia, who have their entire world shattered after Russia launches its full-scale invasion of their home. We use physical comedy, puppetry, audience interaction to grapple with the realities of war, the pain of displacement, and how people still try to find joy and human connection amidst the wreckage. We also have a third clown in the show that acts as a sort of every person kind of character and transforms from to be the various faces of war. So the street performer, soldiers, aid workers, families that are separated across borders, new friends, old friends. Together, the clowns trace this really nice emotional arc of having optimism and joy to sudden wrenching grief. So though this show is focused on the war in Ukraine and how it's still progressing and going on, we really intentionally have been trying to craft the show to resonate with across different wartime experiences across the world and think about how state violence and displacement affects us on a global level. And the way I try to think about Vera and Nadia's journey is in a form of a microcosm. So through them, we can see ideas of geopolitical conflicts that erupt out of everyday life, how they might rupture families, the fear of being queer in public in these spaces that are still not fully safe for us. And yeah, we're very interested in understanding how state violence operates on a whole. The show was originally put up as a part of the Criminal Queerness Festival, the Lincoln Center, last year, specifically with the focus of Ukrainian artists and artists in diaspora. But since then, we've put it up at FizzFest, and we're so excited to do it queerly and explore what it means right now in this moment when there is war in Palestine, in Iran, in South America, in Ukraine still. How does do all of these contexts play together? Yeah, really excited to be part of the lineup.
That is fabulous. What a great timely show there. And bringing us home, we've got the collaborator and performer, Evan Michael Smith, and their show, Too Much Hair.
Yes. Hi, Andrew. Thanks again for having me on the podcast. Too Much Hair is, there's a lot to say about it, but I like to pitch it as the musical Hair, except without the war. It's a gender euphoric cabaret that celebrates authenticity and individuality and diversity of gender expression. It's just a really great time for people of gender diverse backgrounds and people who experience queerness to have their life and experience reflected back to them in a very joyful, very affirming way. We really stay away from the trauma and make sure that everybody is feeling great about their skin and how they present in the world. And we just want to celebrate that kind of authenticity and power. And the show is a culmination of conversations that our creators had with the gender diverse and queer community in New Zealand. So we took a bunch of those conversations, formed them into relatable moments, themes, songs, jokes, and created this whirlwind of a cabaret of queerness and joy. It's a ball. Come and play with us.
I love that. As you can hear, listeners, we have some amazing shows that are happening at this festival, and I want to dive deeper into these works. And I first want to come back to our lovely curator, Jimmy, and I want to know, what has it been like developing this year's festival? Particularly, you know, how did you select these great shows?
Oh, man. The curating this year like was a serious level up from last year. We had, I think, 40 odd submissions for 20-ish slots if enough of the shows are short, which I think last year there were maybe like 5 shows that didn't get accepted. And this year it was like half of them, which is very exciting. You know, I want this festival to grow. I want it to be a place that people want to bring their art, but it was also very intimidating to suddenly be in this position of like, oh, this is a lot of people. But, you know, I just kind of chuck through it. I try to get, you know, as many sort of different kinds of diversity as I can, you know, different kinds of styles of performance, you know, different kinds of artists, different racial and cultural backgrounds, different genders, different ages, you know, sort of different vibes, I guess. I try to skew positive overall, just because I feel like we deserve it. And so I try to find kind of a balance of acknowledging the struggles our community deals with and the fear and the grief, but also kind of promoting this idea of that it's okay to have fun. Like, things can be really bad, but we can still celebrate ourselves and find joy in that.
I love that. I want to jump up to Tori Bogacki, who is the director of The Goblin Woman. And I want to know, you know, what has it been like developing this piece as we roll into the festival?
Hi, yes. Thank you again, Andrew, so much for having me on this podcast. And as Mackenzie referenced a little bit in talking about things, this show has been such a unique gift and such a rare opportunity in the career as a director. You know, my background is predominantly in doing surrealist, abstract, and kind of magic realist pieces. I did Eurydice back in last winter and staged that in a kind of minimalist, abstract setting where we were using basically the text as an elevation of the actors and really kind of foregoing the need for dramatic setting to kind of create more of an immersive movement experience. I directed a piece in the Spoleto Festival where it was really, again, a new piece that was kind of focused on a kind of dance interpretation of text and kind of elevating a story of two lovers through a movement ideology. And a lot of my background is in creative movement. So I had done these pieces, and Mac and I are really close collaborators. We've been friends through our education at Hofstra University on Long Island. And it was funny, I have this vivid memory of the two of us in the ever famous Washington Square Park, where I feel like all artists kind of collaborate and find each other in these strange ways. I feel like it's kind of a hub in and of itself, perhaps a cliche. And we were getting coffee, and it was last April or May, and I was just getting ready to graduate college. And Mac turned to me and was like, I have this play that is right now an inkling of an idea, and I would really love you to work on it because I know that you have this movement background. I know that you like doing these kind of abstract body-led pieces. And Mac was like, I really think this is a show that needs that. And I said, okay, show me a script when you have it and let's work together. You know, I've been dying to work with you in this capacity because we'd kind of been in collaborating circles that were just parallel to each other. And this was a real opportunity to work together and to actually co-found a company, which we're just launching, Plugging Reverie Arts Collective, with myself, Mackenzie, and our co-collaborator and sound designer, producer, Jack Goodman, who's based in Boston and unfortunately cannot be here today. But this process has been really collaborative. It's been really intimate. And it's been unlike anything I've ever done in that we approached this work from the get-go, even in our pre-production talking about it, saying, we want for this show to be led by the collaborative. I feel like so many shows, unfortunately, are led in a way, and I've been in those spaces, especially as a queer artist, where there's kind of this top-down ideology, and there's this, whether it's conscious or subconscious, suffocation of individual idea. And this is the narrative that we are creating. Everybody fit in. And I, both for myself and for this project specifically, really wanted to push against that and say, okay, what is it to really, the first month of our process was kind of like a playground. It was getting into rehearsal spaces and saying, here is this, you know, vignette-focused, movement-focused piece that's kind of, you know, non-linear and poetic. Let's start playing. I'm like, okay, I have this loose shape of, you know, people are here, here, and here on stage. what is it to explore this movement texture? What is it to bring in this element of Laban? Or what is it to bring in a little bit of viewpoints and just play? I don't know. Let's see. And then we would all circle back after we did a scene and be like, okay, I loved that. What is it to then direct and guide that? So I feel more like in this process, it's been such a blessing and a gift in that I am directing. I'm not going to say negatively about myself, but to be really honest with you, it's a guidance. And I feel more like a teacher, a guide. And I'm like, okay, I've been really blessed with some of the educational opportunities I've had in my young career. You know, I studied at the Globe and I'm like, okay, what is it to bring some of that and say, you guys are creating, I'm guiding. Here's something I learned in my education. Here's how we can grow. And it's really exciting to now be in this point where we're about a month or so out from performing and to see where those initial ideas, collaborations, a room full of artists going, why don't we try this? Why don't we do some contact improv? You know, why don't we bring a little like Martha Graham in here? And I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do it. And to see it solidify and create this kind of world is so unreal. So yeah, I'd kind of say it's been collaborative. It's been innovative in a way that I haven't quite done yet in how we even just approached working. It's been great.
That's amazing. Jamie, I want to come back to you with your show, The Pearl Necklace. You know, we've covered you before with the Gotham Storytelling Festival, but what has it been like developing this current iteration of the show for the Queerly Festival?
Well, luckily I had the video of it since it was also live streamed, and I had the live stream video of it. So I've been watching it and seeing where there were laughs where I didn't expect there to be laughs, and places where there weren't laughs where I expected there to be laughs. And then, you know, I'm like, okay, maybe we throw out that line. Maybe we have some more like this. I'm also, you know, editing. There's one story that I think was too long. And so, you know, it's about, for me, I guess it's about editing the show for pace, rhythm, and length and content. And I really don't like watching myself, but, and it's something, you know, like when I got the recording of it after the show in November, I didn't look at it until like last week, you know, so I'm, you know, following along with my script. And I also see where I lost, you know, when I went off script. But I thought, you know what, actually this is where I went off script was actually working. So I'm going to, you know, change that as well in the show. But it's still pretty much the same fun, funny show. And, you know, and some of the people who saw it, they have seen my other shows, Dangerous and Wet and I Favor My Daddy. And they said that they thought that this was maybe my best. So I think I've got something here and I'm excited to bring a newer, more refined and funnier version.
Fantastic. Edu, I want to kind of do the same thing with you. I mean, you are coming off the New York City Fringe Festival with your show, A Drag Is Born. What it's been like developing this upcoming iteration of it?
Well, it's been like an adventure, especially for an immigrant in New York City, because the show began like as a 5-minute sketch. And since then, I've been performing for 1 year all over iconic venues in New York City, like the Sleeper Room or like the Stonewall Inn, which was like the, you know, like to perform like in a church or something like that, you know, for me. And then, yeah, basically when I had like 20 minutes of the piece, then I submitted to the New York City Fringe and I, you know, and I got the spot and I said like, okay, now I need an hour. So a producer, Jess Duse, they bet for the project. And then I got Rachel Resnick, the director, and then Tina Hoffman, the assistant director, and a choreographer. And then, you know, like the team got bigger. And also the show got like bigger. And it's been great. And of course, this is theater, a lot of joy and also a lot of drama. But it's been great.
I love it. That is amazing. Matthew Pozolich, I want to bring you in and I want to ask you, as the director of the show, Shake the Disease, is there a message or thought you're hoping audiences take away from your piece?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to be said about this play in terms of what it is encompassing and the story it's trying to tell. There is a blending of the historical and the horror, which are things that are both oddly hand in hand in a lot of queer culture. But at the same time, there is this sense of multiplicity of truth that I think is really exciting to explore, and I feel like will be really reverberative, where, as Edu was saying, there is the emphasis on drama is what allows us to then have joy, where I think there's the idea of Gilbert Baker's pride flag, where you have this sort of amalgamation of all of these different meanings to then create a cohesive image, that you cannot have sex without life, without healing, sunlight, magic. And all of that together can kind of lead to these ideas of serenity and spirituality. And I feel like queer stories are always rooted in a place of catharsis at the end of the day. And I think to me, this is an intergenerational collaboration. And my goal is that there is a clear ability to have an intergenerational response to the show. You know, these stories, like a lot of our elders, have not been able to live on in a lot of ways. And to me, this show and getting to be a part of this show has been a very healing process already. So to me, I am excited if any of that can then go to an audience.
Love that. That's beautiful. Danielle Levski, tell us, what is the message or thought you hope audiences take away from War and Play?
That is a good question. I think the ultimate message I want folks to take away from this show is that there is always a light in the darkness. There is always a way to transform pain into laughter, despair into wonder. And I think in particular, this show, because we are utilizing clown to tell the story, we can really embrace that and show the full spectrum of human experience. I think in the context of the show, the characters, because they are embodied within the clown state, can engage with the weight of war, trauma, and displacement in a way that makes a lot of space for play, pleasure, and release, which for me is part of queer joy and queer resilience. So I think, yeah, ultimately, I want people to be able to hold space for the complexity of human emotions and what we feel and what we experience. War is terrible. State-sanctioned violence is horrible. There is nothing as terrible as feeling like your entire life is being uprooted. Everyone you know and love is in danger. Your own life is in danger, and you don't know what the next moment of your life will look like. And also, there's space to connect and to create joy and to find moments of meaning. And that's where we find our resilience.
So wonderful. Tarak Ziad, I would love to know, what is the message or thought you're hoping audiences take away from Give Me the MacArthur Genius Grant?
Totally. There's, I feel like, a couple different avenues it starts to branch down towards the end. But basically, through the discussion of the Genius Grant, we get into what exactly a success is, and like, when do you become a success and how do you get there? And after going through a bunch of different possibilities and really interrogating my own life, because ultimately it's a solo show, and that's the perspective I have, the sort of answers we arrive at are that, one, you know, there is no direct path to success as an artist, and nobody can really tell you what it means or how you achieve it or how you'll feel when you quote unquote get there. Also, that as a sort of aside, you know, a lot of these ideas of success that are tied to financial stability and financial viability would sort of evaporate if we had any kind of universal basic income. And so that sort of is a reveal towards the end, layered on top of the whole, I don't know, of the vibe. And then also in the face of, you know, this realization that you'll never really know what it is to be a success or how you'll get there or when or why, if you just focus on the sort of core of being a performer or being an artist, which is that you have something you want to share and you are vying for people's attention. And, you know, craving attention is something that has become very stigmatized in our sort of society that's beginning to label sincerity as corny or like, you know, vulnerability as sort of ugly to look at. And just basically in the face of that, accepting that, okay, maybe all I do really want right now is attention and admiration. And that's sort of the core of most performers. And you don't really have to stigmatize that. It can be fine to crave attention. We're supposed to be empathetic people. How can you tell people that you need to value others' thoughts, feelings, and opinions because they are also people, but then do not define yourself by them and do not crave knowing those things and don't seek them out. You know, that's sort of a catch-22. And so, yeah, I think a core message is that who cares what success is? Maybe love is all you need in a rather cheesy way. The show gets very cheesy, but I think it's presented in a very fun sort of celebratory manner that makes the cheese okay.
I love that. We're all okay with cheese. That's fabulous. Yes. Jess Lauricello, tell us about If I Did, You Deserved It. What is the message or thought you're hoping audiences take away?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, a large part of what this play is just me being a person who is in their early 20s, who is constantly fumbling the ball of being a person and just wondering and questioning, okay, so what makes a good person? What makes a bad person? What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? And I really want people to walk out of the theater just kinder to each other, to themselves, more forgiving of other people, of themselves, more sort of aware of the fact that they are going to die and that what matters is how you treat people in life and not after death. And you're going to fail, but what's important, you know, is that you keep trying, because hurt people, but healed people also heal people. I also hope that people walk out less willing to judge others. I mean, the most happy and well-adjusted people in the play are the devil and his boyfriend, you know, contrary to popular belief and lore of who the devil is, just because I wanted to play with judgment. Also, the play is about judgment. And you're literally sitting there as an audience member judging these other people who you don't know other than that they are on stage in front of you. And I hope people question, oh, why am I having so much fun judging these people? Am I not judging myself enough? Am I judging myself too much? Am I judging other people too much? You know, I just hope that people come out of it kinder and more receptive and also just more willing to laugh at themselves. Because I think we're all going to die, but that probably means nothing. But life is important.
I love that. That is a brilliant idea. Well, I want to ask our remaining panelists a brilliant question, especially regarding this festival, the Queerly Festival. And that question is, who do you help have access to your work? And Evan Michael Smith, I want to start with you. I'm living for this clown show. You've got too much hair. Who are you hoping to have access to it?
Well, when I came to the project, I was experiencing a lot of frustration with the business and trying to figure out how I can present my art in an authentic way, and finding too much hair. And we had the pleasure of actually taking the show to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And we had a very successful run and we're very proud of our work. But what was most revealing to us was meeting the audience afterwards and having these moments of connection with the people we were just playing with in our silly little show. And seeing the experience of having their life, or at least the shade of their existence, reflected back on stage in this joyful way. It was so moving to have these people of all ages tell us, you know, there's a lyric in one of the songs that I sing that says, turns out the monster is me, more beautiful than I thought I could be. And, you know, we met one particular band who came to our show a few times and they ended up getting that lyric tattooed on their body. You know, so it's just the experience of looking up on the stage and saying, that's me. Those are my tales. That's my story. It's something I think that queer and gender diverse people have not had a lot of. And, you know, nowadays it is growing to a more public mainstream place, but largely, you know, we've been invisible, we've been illegal, we've been erased. So having these experiences of people like me who were looking for these places of authentic, powerful expression. And being blessed enough to be able to give that to them, that's all we want to do with the show. We want to create community. We want to create powerful feelings of acceptance within yourself, because we know how hard it is to walk around this world as yourself. And we know you have no other choice but to do so. So we want to give you all the tools and all the joy and all the laughs about what that experience is, what it is to walk your own path, what it is to find your own definition. And I think that everyone can use that. You know, breaking the binary doesn't just free us, it frees everybody. You know, we've had people who don't exist in queer spaces come to our show and just talk about how amazing it was to see people so free and so powerful and how they felt invited into the game. And that's what we want to do. We want to invite people powerfully to their game, to your tribe. You know, we're all members of that. So we want to get the show in front of as many people as we can, because we know that there's healing here, there's catharsis here, there's something that people are hungry for. And we want to give people like us a safe place that's theirs. So everybody come to the show, all of you.
Yes, amen to all of that. That is wonderful. Leif Larson, who do you hope have access to Shake the Disease?
Wow, I think, you know, I write to be in conversation with my queer community, and I think that's why I really want to have access to this piece. I'm thinking especially about younger generations. So much of our history has been erased and not taught in school or available to us growing up. So I think theater is one place where we can really share and learn that history from each other. And, you know, I guess when I say history, I don't just mean what happened, you know, to who, what, and where, but also the emotional and psychological history of, you know, what we carried through that time. So, yeah.
I love that.
Everyone.
Maggie C., I want to come to you, and I want to know, ladies at a gay girls bar, who are you hoping to have access to this piece?
So in the couple of years I've been performing this, some of my best audiences have been lesbians in their 60s and older who really enjoy seeing the experience they've had of coming out into bars and finding kind of a hidden community based around bars being part of their coming out. So they have been incredible audiences who really enjoy seeing that history reflected back to them. And building off of sort of the idea of history is not just who, what, when, where, but also kind of there are emotional threads. The show is based on, in large part, on these interviews with women who were part of communities in working class lesbian bars in Buffalo, New York. It's called the Buffalo Women's Oral History Project. And I read a book about this project and many years ago. And then in preparing for Ladies at a Gay Girls Bar, I listened to tapes of interviews, which is really incredible. And yet, despite there being this incredible wealth of first-person stories, I find that the stories of femme women were not as visible or available. And also that I think oral history is so valuable, but it also kind of gets filtered through the current time and place when someone's telling you their story, and it also gets filtered through somebody's experiences and their trauma and what they're willing to disclose and what they feel comfortable talking about. So the story that I sort of felt like I couldn't find, that I teased out kind of through fictional writing and my own lived experience, was to talk about kind of the emotional content, what it might have felt like to be in this community and specifically to be a femme in this community. So I'm hoping that in addition to my beloved older lesbians, also that people who have a desire to express and live and celebrate feminine gender can find this show and feel some resonance with it.
That is a beautiful answer. I love that. And rounding us up, Mackenzie Crystal, tell us, who do you hope have access to your piece, The Goblin Woman?
I think that I'm with Evan in that I hope that everyone has access to it. The show comes from a very vulnerable place for me. It came as an exploration of my own gender and my own queerness. And it was a way for me to, and is still a way for me through the process, to process the immense fear that I had in navigating gender and queerness and my gender and my queerness. And I think that whether people identify as queer or not, no matter your gender, no matter your sexuality, I think that we all struggle with this very internalized fear of being ourselves. I think that society imposes upon us a very much like, this is how you should be, and this is how you must be, and to not be this way is dangerous. And I'm still working through those fears, and I'm still navigating exactly who I am and how I feel and how I relate to the world and to the people around me. And I also found myself struggling with, I think I struggled a lot with queerness because I'm also autistic. And a lot of what is presented to us about queerness in the mainstream media is very loud and very bright, very colorful, which is beautiful and incredible, and something that I'm also learning to embrace, because it was something for me that felt so overwhelming at first. I was like, this must not be for me. And so I was very, very internalized in my fears and in navigating who I was. And so this show has been a process of learning to open that up, to find community, to create community, and to see what it feels like to be emboldened and to be true, and that what that looks like and feels like for every person is different. And no matter how it manifests for each individual person, it's beautiful and incredible and perfect. And so I hope that as many people as possible from as many different backgrounds are able to see this show and experience catharsis through it, experience liberation through it, experience community through it, and walk away emboldened to find and create that community and that sense of liberation for themselves and for as many people as possible.
That is so wonderful. I love all that. As we wrap up, I want to ask all of you, if our listeners would like more information about your show or festival, or maybe they'd like more information about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so? And Jimmy, I'm going to start with you and the festival overall.
Yeah, so the website is frigid.nyc. You can get all the tickets, all the info there. We are also on Instagram at Queerly Festival. If you want to get in touch with me personally, you can just email me. It's jimmy@frigid.nyc. I also will see anything on the Instagram.
Fabulous. Edu, what about you and A Drag Is Born?
Oh my God. I you know, I'm very bad at spelling my name. So I would say I'm at edudiaz.com, edudiaz.com. And I'll be in Quarterly Friday the 14th and Saturday 15th. So I'll see you under St. Mark's.
Fabulous. Jamie over the Pearl Necklace, how about you?
Well, you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, where I tell a true story in high heels every day. And that's Jamie, J-A-M-I-E underscore Brickhouse on TikTok, or at Jamie Brickhouse on the other socials. And I also, my website is jamiebrickhouse.com. And my show, Pearl Necklace, A Gay Sexcapade, is playing Friday, June 14th at 10:30 p.m. and Sunday, June 23rd. At 7 p.m. So I hope to see y'all there. And I'm doing Risk next week here in New York. Thanks.
Tarak Ziad, tell us about Give Me a MacArthur Genius Grant.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Tarek A. Ziad. So that's T-A-R-E-K-A-Z-I-A-D. My middle name starts with A. My name is not Tareka, which I get a lot. My show will be going up at the Queerly Festival on June 14th and 17th, I believe. And then I'm also performing in the Hollywood Fringe Festival in Los Angeles. If anybody is in LA, there are 3 dates for that one, which I believe are the 9th, 21st, and 29th, also of June. So I'll sort of be all over the place. Yeah, again, Instagram at Tarek Aziad, TarekAziad. Thanks.
Fabulous. Maggie C and Ladies at a Gay Girls Bar.
So I am at The Femme Show, THEFEMME Show on social media and thefemmeshow.com. And I am performing June 24th. At 9 p.m. and June 29th at 5 p.m.
Amazing. Tori and Mackenzie and the Goblin Woman, tell us about how we can get more info or get a hold of y'all.
Yeah, absolutely. We can both hop on in this, but to learn more about our show, we are on socials as the Goblin Woman. Our company, which we're also launching with myself, Mac, and Jack, is found at Reverie Arts Collective on socials. And then Mac, if you want to talk about our show dates.
Yeah, so we will actually be premiering The Goblin Woman at the Rogue Theater Festival, which will be at the Flea Theater on June 9th, Sunday, June 9th at 4 p.m. Tickets go on sale next week, so keep an eye out for that. You can find links on our Instagram at The Goblin Woman or on our new company collective Instagram at Reverie Arts Collective, which is R-E-V-E-R-I-E. Arts Collective. You can also find more information on our individual websites. I'm MackenzieRobinCrestle.com or at MacRobin.k on Instagram. And Tori, if you want to jump in with yours.
Yeah, absolutely. I am at Tori Bogacki, B-O-G-A-C-K-I. Shout out to my Polish ancestors. And my website is www.toribogacki.com.
And I also realized, I think I gave the Rogue Festival dates and not the Queerly Festival dates. So we'll be premiering at the Rogue Theater Festival, June 9th at the Flea Theater at 4 p.m. And then we will be at Under St. Mark's on June 13th, Thursday, June 13th at 7 p.m. and Saturday, June 22nd at 5 p.m.
Lovely. Just tell us about If I Did, You Deserved It.
Yeah, so this is actually the first production produced by my theater company that I founded, along with Drake Irizarry, who plays the devil, and Pedro Vieira, who is also an actor in it. And we are called Laurizarry, so you can follow us on Instagram at L-A-U-R-I-Z-A-R-R-Y. You can also follow me on Instagram if you want, at Jess Lauricello. You can sign up for our mailing list if you wanted to. Just email at laurizarry@gmail.com. And the show is June 21st at 7 p.m. at Under St. Mark's.
Fabulous. Leif and Matthew, tell us about Shake the Disease.
Shake the Disease, we're going to actually premiere at Theater Row as part of the Downtown Urban Arts Festival on June 22nd before we come to the Queerly Festival on July 3rd. Matthew and I just launched an Instagram for the play, Shake the Disease_play. And my Instagram handle is biglife99 and leaf-larson.com.
Beautiful. I'm so sorry. And then yes, please, Matthew.
Yeah, you can find me at Matthew Pazulich on Instagram. It's just my first and last name, as is my website, MatthewPazulich.com. For anyone who uses Twitter, at The Human Matt.
Danielle, tell us about War and Play. How can we get more info or contact?
Yeah, totally. So I am Critic Turned Clown on Instagram and Facebook. My website is CriticTurnedClown.squarespace.com. I don't have that domain name, but that's okay. We can all copy and paste a website. And in terms of our dates, we're still figuring out our second date for Queerly, but the one we for sure have booked is June 28th at 7 p.m. And then we're also going to be in the Philly Fringe in September. So if any of you are coming out to Fringe for that as well, that's another time you can see us perform.
Amazing. Bringing us home, Evan Michael Smith and Too Much Hair.
Yes. Thank you again for having us on the podcast. And thank all of you for sharing your stories about your work. It made me really hungry for this content. Too Much Hair will be playing the Queerly Festival on June 18th and June 24th. If you want to learn more about what we do at Butch Mermaid, you can check us out on Instagram at Butch Mermaid Productions. If you want to learn more about me, Evan Michael Smith, you can find me at the_Evan_Michael_Smith at Instagram, blah, blah, blah. However, I'll warn you all, I am an older millennial, so I do not post all the time, just highlights. So check us out, and we really hope to see as many of you as we can at Too Much Hair. Thanks.
It's wonderful. I want to thank all of you so much for taking the time to speak with me and sharing your works. This is so wonderful. I'm so excited about the festival. Congrats in advance to all of you on your amazing works. This is truly so wonderful. You are bringing some great stories and shows to this amazing festival. So thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you so much
for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. What a great interview.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
My guests today have been several of the artists and productions being put on at the Queerly Festival, as well as the curator and co-artistic director at Frigid NYC, Jimmy Lovett. They joined us to talk to us about this year's upcoming 2024 Queerly Festival being presented by Frigid New York. It's happening June 13th through July 3rd at Under St. Mark's, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you come out and join us at this year's Queerly Festival. It's so exciting. The shows are amazing. We've had the privilege of seeing a couple of them already, and they are just absolutely stunning. So don't miss out on it. The 2024 Queerly Festival, June 13th through July 3rd. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a state whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.